This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 316, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you. Welcome to the first iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast of 2012, episode number 316. My name is Ron Richards, and as always, I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
I am a little rusty. I'm just going to put that out there at the beginning.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
I'm coming!
Couldn't even show up.
Oh, hey. Sorry.
It is good to be back after our little holiday hiatus there at the end of 2011, but it's 2012 and we're back in the swing of things, and we are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website that is all about comics and comic books and comic book culture and the enjoyment of all those said things. And every week a bunch of comics come out and we read a ton of them, and one of us picks the comic that we feel was the pick of the week, the one that we got the most enjoyment out of that week, writes a review of it over on ifanboy.com, and then we come here to this year podcast to chat about it, as well well as other comic book miscellanea and things of interest. Before we get into the show, a quick reminder and warning that we will be talking about what happens in the comics, so we're going to spoil them a bit. So if you haven't read your comic books from last week, we advise you to press pause and come back, or, you know, be warned as you continue to listen. 2012 is a year of no prisoners, so we can't be responsible for your spoilage. Josh had the daunting task of the first pick of the week of 2012. Josh, you take it away.
You poor bastard.
And you swerved.
It's not. It wasn't just me though, right? I mean, no. It was a shit start to the year.
Oh, yeah. It was an all right week, but it wasn't great. Yeah,
it was very mediocre.
And I
know I don't mean to take that away from the pick of the week, which almost nothing I could say would spoil for you, by the way, in regards to taking no prisoners.
Wait a minute. Did he miss the football?
The Red Baron. He prevailed. The pick of the week was Peanuts number one.
Who knew?
I surprised myself.
Boom Studios.
Boom Studios at the Kaboom section, which is the kid friendly, the all ages bits of it. It really was one of those weeks where I just wasn't enjoying the books I was reading. They were just sort of blah. And at the end of it, the only one that I laughed at, the one that I had fun, was I really enjoyed reading Peanuts number one, which was a little Peanuts compendium. There were three original sections, two sort of longer stories, and then a little tiny one page Charles Schulz, I guess, archival strips in between them. Just a fun little package, and it felt like Peanuts. And I was like, and I hadn't, you know, I'm not a giant Peanuts fan, but I watched them. I really like the tone of those cartoons, and I was like, when you're younger, everybody knows about them and they like them, at least if you're our age and in America.
Oh, man, but, I remember the library had basically trade paperbacks of old Peanuts strips.
I had all those books.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. We'd fight over who could take them out of the library, and like there would like people get in trouble for hogging them and stuff like that. Oh, God, like second grade to like fourth grade, that was it. It was like crack.
But you heard that, you know, like then as you get older, you hear that, you know, Charles Schulz is considered to be a master, you know, of the form. And, you know, when you're younger, it's a little hard to see that. But, you know, when you're older, you know, you've been around comics a lot. You've read all sorts of stuff. You're like, I can totally see where his really unique voice and take on these characters. And just because they're simple or just for kids, it doesn't mean that there's not a whole lot of strokes of brilliance in it. And the cartooning is really, really wonderful. It's set the stage for everything. You know, everything great that comes after it.
Yeah, I mean, it really is one of those American institutions. I mean, even totally. If, you know, coming off of the holidays, you know, you look at one of the great Christmas TV specials is the Charlie Brown Christmas. You know, like mm-hmm. It really resonates. Even though we talk about like people, you know, we say if you were like us as kids growing up, whatever. But even though Charles Schulz, he's dead, right? He passed away, right?
Yeah.
Even though he's dead, I mean, the strips still run in newspapers. They're still syndicated. You know, there's a whole industry around Schulz. Yeah,
and in a way that it's different than Garfield.
Yeah.
Which when I was a kid I thought was great, and now is a joke.
Really?
And,
you know, I mean, Garfield's just a bunch of lasagna jokes. I mean, when you think about it, when it comes down to it.
You know, like all the Peanuts characters are these little microcosms of adult people.
Yes.
But it's greatly simplified. The point being, I really enjoyed this issue. I thought they really got the voice down. I thought they got the cartooning looked pretty spot on. And I had fun with it. I laughed a couple of times out loud, and like I just wasn't doing that on anything this week. The main stories are by
not even Stormwatch.
No. The main stories are by Vicky Scott, who did the pencils and story for the first sort of longer segment, and then this little bit at the end on how to draw Charlie Brown, which is there's a lot of Lucy in this book. Let me just put that straight. It was a Lucy centric book.
That bitch.
And then you're not kidding. I'm guessing a lot of late baby boomer sexism has to do with Lucy. And then the other story was by Shane Houghton of Reed Gunther fame and artist Matt Whitlock. And it was just there were simple cartoons. There was no Jim Lee magic going on. There wasn't any reinvention happening here. But what there was were, you know, sort of fun, well-characterized stories, and I thought they were drawn really well. The first story was basically Lucy gets a song stuck in her head. It's Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and she can't get rid of it. She's really mad about it. She tries to get it stuck in Charlie Brown's head, and he's like, I like this song. It's pretty good. And she's mad that he likes it, and then he starts sharing it with other people, and they all like it, and they're having fun, and then she's mad that they're all having fun, and then she gets it stuck in her head again. But it gets passed around, like only one person can have it stuck in their head at the same time.
Is it a metaphor for STD?
I think. It's a gonorrhea parable.
I see.
The little Charles Schulz strips were fun. And then the second story was Lucy tries to rent out Snoopy as a bloodhound to help find a cat because she's not making any money.
She is a bitch.
But there's some really fun segments. There's this one segment we put up in the panels of the week where she tells the girl, oh, no, he's part bloodhound. And Snoopy, of course, is a beagle. I mean, let's be honest. And the girl keeps getting closer and closer to him. And Snoopy's muzzle gets all bunched up. And in my head, I could hear that sound that he makes. Like, I could just hear the cartoon sort of coming through my head. It made me laugh. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun book. And it was like – and I just couldn't help but think out of sort of all the books that I read were just like all the other books I've read. This is the kind of thing that, you know, there needs to be more of comics like these. More people will enjoy them. Kids can read this. It's $4, but
kids won't read that.
I like the idea of it. I like that it exists a lot.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, because it's like, because you think about it, I mean, like we get so caught up in the, you know, in the complicated comic books and what is comics and stuff like that. But really, you know, like I was weaned on Garfield and Peanuts and Calvin and Hobbes and all stuff like that, and that was all elementary school. And so having new material in the world for kids that age, you know, like I don't know if I would have gotten into comics the way I am now if I didn't read those in elementary school.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's a good thing. So,
and I just really enjoyed it. I have no caveats on it other than that. It was a lot of fun. I thought it was pretty well done. I think going forward, it'd be cool. There's a 4-issue miniseries that, you know, maybe this was focusing on Lucy specifically. It would be cool if the next one was, say, a Linus issue.
And do you think that well, who knows, we're speculating what they might do, but it would be nice if they focus on the other characters, or is there some sort of Lucy
industrial complex?
Yeah, exactly, some sort of, you know, Lucy based message that the people behind these books are trying to get across.
It's the feminist lobby. I mean, let's be honest, they got a lot of power because the GOP debate's coming up and this is the other side of it, and frankly they're frightening.
And it's quite grassroots. I mean, going through the Peanuts, you know, as a mouthpiece. Yeah,
it's a really subtle punch. I mean, you have to be pretty well informed to be able to pick up on this kind of stuff.
It's that liberal elite, man. They'll get you at any way they can. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I liked the Peanuts book. Did either of you guys read the Peanuts book?
No.
That's what I thought maybe you would, because you guys went to read the Muppets comics.
Yeah, because you're talking about an art that's so closely associated with one person. It's like if they put out a Calvin and Hobbes comic that Bill Watterson had nothing to do with, I wouldn't read it either.
Except no one else has ever done Calvin and Hobbes, and I'm fine with that. But we've seen a billion interpretations.
Yeah, but the thing is, as Ron said, as a kid, I was huge. I had all those Peanuts books. My dad
probably watched the cartoons,
somewhere.
Right?
Yeah, but it's a different medium. It's a different medium.
But did you? Now this is going in a whole other direction. But did you read Peanuts because you love Charles Schulz?
Well, I read it as a kid, but as an adult now, I recognize how closely associated it was with one person. I wouldn't necessarily do it the same way. I wouldn't read a Sherlock Holmes novel not written by Arthur Doyle. So,
all right,
it's a very personal work. Yeah. So I'm not really interested in other interpretations.
Yeah, I have no specific politics like that. I just had a busy week. I just didn't get to it. Sorry. I will read it.
They got to you too.
They did. So moving on. So the probably the biggest release of the week was Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' new creator-owned book, Fatale Number One, published by Image. Did you guys partake in the Fatale?
It was all right.
Yeah. I got through it.
Coming off of one of the best series of 2011, Criminal: Last of the Innocent, Fatale was promised to be a noirish horror book. You just thought it was all right, Connor?
If I felt about this the same way I did about Incognito, I'd rather have more Criminal. I'm not really all that interested in what's going on here. It was okay. The art was fine. But when I finished it, I felt no real compelling reason to continue reading. I probably will, but
yeah.
And it's almost the same exact reaction I had to Incognito, which is I don't really care. But
interesting, because I actually found it really compelling. After reading it, it didn't go how I thought it would. And I actually found myself at the end of it going, oh, I can't wait for the next issue. It wasn't like, oh my God, this is the best thing, the best thing since sliced bread. And I definitely like Criminal Last of the Innocent possibly better. But, I liked the groundwork that was laid in this, at least in terms of the, then and now kind of aspect of it. And the fact that you've got something happening, in the present day and with ties to the past, I thought that was, at least for me, it was engaging.
I just couldn't sink my teeth into it.
Yeah.
I tried and I was bored.
Yeah,
was the thing, and I didn't, these two guys used to be my favorite thing out there.
I know, yeah,
and I don't know if it's just that. I don't think it's that they've gotten worse or whatever. It's just it's the same trick.
Yeah,
it's the same voice. It's the same thing, and maybe I've had enough of it.
Yeah,
I was gonna say
there's been a lot over the past couple of years. It's been a lot. Yeah,
and I just I don't. It's like one of those diminishing returns things.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just didn't care as I was reading it. And I suspected that might be the case,
Yeah.
Just because, but I don't know. There was nothing about it that stuck out that is any different than anything. It was just like, oh, it's like another criminal arc. Yeah.
I love that the back cover, the panel that they pulled from the book on the back cover, the shot of the street. I thought that was great. I don't know.
That's a great image. Well, yeah. I mean, the art's fine. It's, although there's a couple of instances where the main character looked a lot different from panel to panel, but
yeah.
That's
kind of, I'm struggling a little bit with Sean Phillips because I'm getting the feeling that everybody just looks the same throughout all the books. What I mean?
Like Steve Dillon or anybody with the. Jim Lee.
Sean Phillips, he's one of my favorites. I think he's one of the best guys out there. But because he's been doing this with Ed Brubaker for so long, all the books are starting to look the same.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like he, you can see him. I've seen him do other stuff that, with other artists. I remember when he did Marvel Zombies the first time, and you're like, what a weird choice for it. But he was great for it,
Yeah.
Not that I wanted to do zombie books or whatever, but it'd be cool, to see the other stuff he can do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm intrigued by it. I'm definitely gonna stick with it. I want to see where it goes. Part of it takes place in San Francisco, so it's got me on one level there. And then it's got and like I said, I like the history aspect of it. I'm not too keen on horror and that sort of thing, so I'm curious to see how horror this will go. This wasn't too horrific.
It might have been just the whiff of Cthulhu that I was just like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. the whiff of Cthulhu.
Yeah, it's like a slightly briny.
You can get that at Macy's for the in the perfect.
They'll spray it right on you. You won't even ask.
Just dressed all in black, so you don't really see her coming.
And you're a Cthulhu all day long.
Yeah,
whiff of Cthulhu. from Calvin Klein.
I don't even know what Cthulhu is.
I have no idea either.
I live in the world where everybody's like Cthulhu this and Skyrim that, and I can't keep up.
Tebow.
What the fuck is a Tebow?
I have no idea.
No one will shut up about this guy.
Well, according to Wikipedia...
This guy can't throw football. Let's move on.
According to Wikipedia, Cthulhu is a fictional character who first appeared in the short story The Call of Cthulhu, published in the pulp magazine Weird Tales in 1928. The character was created by H.P. Lovecraft. So there you go.
Oh, there's another one.
Yeah,
there's a word. Lovecraft is thrown around all the time as a...
It's very Lovecraftian.
As an adjective. It's Lovecraftian. I don't know what that means.
It's Cthulhu.
It smells a little like squid. Lovecraftian.
I actually had some calamari for dinner the other night. It was a little, it was a little Lovecraftian.
Slightly Lovecraftian.
H.P. Lovecraft is an American author of horror, fantasy, and science fiction, especially the subgenre known as weird fiction.
You know what we're doing now? We're generating posts of disbelief.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
We never
I can't
said,
believe.
We never said.
Never
we,
here's what you need to read.
We never said we knew everything.
I don't want to.
I know, exactly.
Weird fiction. No, I'm good.
It's very Lovecraftian.
I knew who Lovecraft is. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I know vaguely who he is. I just never followed up on it, and I don't care.
It's not what you're interested in.
You want to know what's funny? You want to know what's funny is that I absolutely confuse Lovecraft with the people behind the H.R. Puffin stuff.
I believe they're different, but I don't know.
They're different.
For years, I thought because it's H.P. Lovecraft and H.R. Puffin stuff, and so I just thought they were the same thing. And so when everyone was like, "Oh wow, that's so," it's so Lovecraftian. I'm like, really? They like that kid show? That Sid and Marty Krofft show? It's
like... Well, Krofft, Lovecraft.
Yeah, and it's the H, the HP, HR. Yeah,
that's exactly. One little line. It makes those initials the same.
Oh, I like when we admit things. I'm also going to admit that I'm kind of enjoying The Defenders from Marvel. Which is
again,
not
a, you'd be the only one.
I would be, yeah. I didn't get to talk about it when the first issue came out because I was off that week. But so Defenders number 2 came out this week, and Fraction's writing it with Terry Dodson, and it's just it's just fun old style Marvel kind of action. And I do got to admit that I'm a sucker for the dumb bottom of the page little commentary stuff like they used to do back in the day, which is, you know, admittedly dumb, but I enjoyed it. I enjoy it. So
call that the Steve Wacker bread and butter.
Is it Wacker?
I don't know. He's been doing a lot, hasn't he?
I don't know.
I feel like he signs them Wacker.
Yeah, but
I don't think he's doing that book.
Yeah, but this is you know, it's been good. No, this is a Brevoort book.
Yeah,
Brevoort and Panicia. Wow. So, but anyway, but yeah, no, it's just kind of fun, you know, fun big action, big kind of, you know, Marvel based. You know, just like something happens, they fight. Something happens, they fight, and that kind of thing. And it's not it's interesting because it doesn't feel as complex. Like, I was actually curious about this because if you listen to when I talked to Fraction about the book when we did Don't Miss About It, also when Suntra talked to him about Word Balloon, he talked about how he's doing it Marvel style, mainly in a way to challenge his own kind of writing style. And it's interesting because it is lighter and it is less dense than the previous stuff I've read of his. Not saying it's perfect by any means, but it's
it would be really hard to switch to Marvel style if you've just been doing full script. Here's the thing, in case you don't know this at home, because a lot of people might not, there's sort of two accepted ways of doing scripts in comics. One is full script, where you say page one, panel two, this is what happens in it, here's the dialogue, you give it to the artist, they interpret it, that can be as detailed as you and your artist want it to be. And there's Marvel style, which was how Stan Lee did it, basically, was he would give them a plot. Sometimes it was broken down by pages. Sometimes it was just, here's what happens in the issue. And then, you know, Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko would just do all the pages. And then Stan would go in later and put the dialogue. That's right. Marvel style.
Yeah. So it's putting in dialogue over the already drawn art. And now, admittedly, Marvel style has evolved over the years. Like that, it's very simple in the Stan Lee Jack Kirby way is very simplified in that Jack would draw it and then Stan would dialogue over it. Now there's a little more specificity. And I think Fraction got into it when he talked to Suntress about it. I remember hearing that. But you know, he'll say like on this page, this needs to happen, but leaves it open to Dodson to be able. We got Dodson.
You got to really trust your artist to do that.
Yeah, and I think Terry Dodson is somebody who. And they've worked together a lot, you know, and it looks great. I mean, and it flows and it looks, you know, it's really kind of engaging. That sort of thing. Like I said, it's not going to win an Eisner. It's not the greatest thing in the world. It's not, you know, I mean, it's not changing anything, but it, for what a Defenders comic is, which is essentially, you know, just a ragtag random team, with a little bit of a backbone of Doctor Strange, it's doing the job. So,
yeah. So it's the classic lineup plus Iron Fist, is that what it is?
Yeah. So it's Strange, Namor, Silver Surfer, and then She-Hulk and Iron Fist. Yep.
I'm so sick of this blonde white rich guy quota they're trying to fill. You know,
he's actually kind of wacky about. I mean, in this, like, it's funny because it's like because Fraction was saying he couldn't wait to get back to writing Iron Fist after doing it with Brubaker. You know, on that one, it was great years ago. But this Iron Fist reads
different.
And what Bendis has been doing with him in New Avengers, like, it just. I still love the white and gold costume. I really do like that. But but yeah, just kind of like in the first issue, he was just, you know, wanted to read comics and was just very kind of aloof and kind of white. And I was like, oh, this isn't the same kind of guy. But no, but it's good. And She-Hulk is an interesting addition. Like, that's a trope or an offshoot of an established character. It is a new character, and I'm enjoying seeing. I've never read much She-Hulk, so it's.
Is it Red She-Hulk?
It's
Red.
It's Red She-Hulk. It's Betty. Yeah.
That's Betty.
Yeah. Yep.
So. God, there's just no knowing Bruce Banner. You're gonna be hulked out eventually.
Yeah. Exactly. So, anyway, that's Defenders.
Swamp Thing number 5 had a really disturbing cover because pigs are scary when you think about it.
They are.
They'll eat anything.
Yeah.
They'll eat you.
It's true.
Just ask Mr. Wu.
So delicious.
I thought nice to have Yannick Paquette back.
Yep.
Yes.
I don't
yes.
think that the fill-in guy last time did a bad job at all.
No.
But you can see the difference, even if you can't necessarily put your finger on it correctly. I realized that Swamp Thing's not in this book.
He's only been a couple of panels the whole run so far.
Yeah. Which I'm not. This is not a complaint.
Although, just, did you see the last page?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously alluding to Alec is going to be like, he's starting to use his control over the plant, which we weren't even sure he had.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool. And that was a fun issue. It was very fast though. It felt like it was over really quickly. The threats were. It was funny they put the kid in the tree.
I especially enjoyed the layouts of this issue.
I was just about to make that comment. Yeah,
they're crazy, but they work. There's no storytelling problems, but there's no grids. There's no real panel borders here. It's all like thick lines sort of angrily splashed across the page.
It's almost organic.
Yeah.
Well, that's obviously what they're going for. But what I think is cool is a lot of times when you see those kind of layouts that are sort of all crazy, they do a lot of panels. And in these, I think he actually lets it breathe a lot. It's not too many panels per page. It's 4, 5, 6, but sort of all over the place. Whereas, you know, you've seen Neil Adams do a page like that, and there's teeth, and there's, you know, like 12, 13 panels or something like that.
Yeah. But I'm more impressed by Yannick Paquette in this title since he started than anything I've seen him done previously. Mm-hmm. I think it's really nice to see him kind of let loose kind of in the way in the direction that he's going with this. And I would never thought I would have made 5 issues on Swamp Thing, but here I am still reading it.
Is Francesco Francavilla still going to do this, or has that quietly gone away?
Was he supposed to do it?
He was supposed to be the other artist.
Originally, but it must have gone away. That Marco Rudy must be the...
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
No one's mentioning it. I just realized now.
Interesting.
Like anything, until I actually see it on the page.
In
comics, you never can assume...
Yep.
The announcement's going to happen. So, Punisher number 7 was the reuniting of one of the Gotham Central teams of Greg Rucka, Michael Lark, and Stefano Guadiano. It's a fill-in art team. I'm really enjoying this book.
Yeah.
I'm still really enjoying this book. It's fun. I like the fact that Punisher, like Swamp Thing, is very rarely in the book. Mm-hmm. He's more of a force of nature on the outside. Whenever he shows up, it's scary. In that sense, it's very much like Gotham Central and Batman was barely in the book. But it's mostly about the cops and mostly about the victims, and mostly about the people, the reporters, the people trying, everybody around the Punisher, and the Punisher shows up and causes havoc, and then it's everybody else dealing with it. And
was the Punisher even in this issue other than the flashback?
No.
Yeah, that's great. So, no. That flashback, my God, that 2-page spread of Daredevil Punisher back in the day fighting, that was like, I turned that and I was like, oh man, I wish Michael Lark was on this book all the time.
And the guy from the Warriors in the background?
Yeah, Warriors, come out
I've
gotta, and play.
I've got to give credit to the light week feature.
Yes,
where Connor mentioned this, and I was like, oh. So I bought this right away because I had dropped off, much to my own chagrin, because I just couldn't deal with the art on it before. It's going to be rough going back.
Yep.
Well, see, I really like the art. I like it because it's sort of really? It is sort of horror esque, in that so it works in that sense. When he shows up, it's really kind of scary when the way that Cachetto draws him, or Cachetto. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it really does work for what they're doing with this book. But this was a great issue. You could pick this up on your own without
really
knowing anything and enjoy it. It's fun.
Yeah, and actually, if you're looking on for a jumping on point for Punisher, this could be it because it fleshes out the two cops that are associated with it and really kind of lays out what's going on. You know, and I thought Michael Lark, I mean, the shots of them driving upstate, I mean, that, I mean, Connor, I mean, like, we've driven on that parkway.
Yeah,
it's so good. Yeah,
it's to crib a phrase. It's good Lark.
Yeah, it's good Lark.
I mean, I don't know of bad Lark. I can't be. I don't remember a time where I was like, this Michael Lark issue is awful.
Well, he is the ladies' man, right? there's a flashback.
Yeah, I know. I want to bring rich people back. By the way,
I saw your tweet. I saw.
I want to work on that.
All right, good luck with that. Isn't that Connors to bring back? Isn't that Connors?
Yeah, you can't just bring back my joke.
Rich. I'm not. Whoa. We're not a partnership now. I see. That's how it is.
It's been every man.
Fiefdoms.
It's been every man for himself for years.
Ron said it's no prisoners.
No prisoners.
Oh, wow. That's how it's
2012, man. We're not pulling any punches. We're not holding back anymore. You know, like, listen, we've been playing with kid gloves all these years. Now it gets real. What am I saying?
So did he buy this Punisher knife like down in on
No, he got it in the crime scene.
24th Street?
No. Oh, where did the Punisher get the knife?
In the knife district?
Yeah.
No, he engraved it. He has a knife engraver.
Yeah.
He got a Dremel for Christmas one year. Like the Christmas before his family got murdered, his wife got him a Dremel.
Yeah.
And that's, that's.
And just by coincidence, he put a skull on that thing.
Yeah. Because, you know, skulls are cool. It was the 70s.
I love the thing that no one ever talks about in comics is how these guys get all these logos. produced and because that's embroidered.
Hard. If you ever tried to do that in real life, it's hard.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, all these
Batman's got everything's got a bat on it. It's boots. Yeah. Where does he get a boot with a bat on the sole of the boot?
Yeah, who do you?
Somewhere there's an undocumented dude in Gotham City who's scared off his ass.
He's the cobbler of the metahumans. Yeah.
He's really sick of bats.
Well, there was that great short story in 1989 when the Batman movie was the big craze. They put out a short story book of Batman stories written by guys like Isaac Asimov and people like big names in genre comics. And one of the stories was about a guy, a little cobbler in like the garment district who had a tiny little office whose whole job was to make superhero costumes and villain costumes. And it was like neutral territory. It was a really good story.
Well, that's like, I mean, and Kirkman picked up on that with Invincible. And I kind of wish he would go back to that. Like, I used to love that. There's the dude who made the costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done that in Spider-Man, I think, too. There's the costume guy who worked for both sides.
Flash had a guy. He had a name.
Oh,
Tom
did he?
Used to talk about it. Remember?
Really?
He did all the supervillain costumes.
Yeah, I remember. I totally remember. What was that guy's name? I forget. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And there's Edna from The Incredibles.
Yes, of course. So yeah, it's a good concept. Somebody they should bring that back. So. Anyway, so if you're looking for comics and you're tired of them piling up around your house and the books everywhere, you should consider the world of digital comics and you should check out Graphically. Graphically is iFanboy's parent company, and we're so excited to move into 2012 with what Graphically's got coming up. If you go to graphically.com, you can download and read comics from publishers like Marvel and Image and Archaea and IDW, Boom, Top Cow. There's hundreds and hundreds of publishers there, thousands of comics that you definitely check out. Apps for the iOS, Android, your Kindle Fire book from Amazon, Barnes & Noble Nook Color, Nook Tablet. We've got stuff for you there. Just tons and tons of comics for you to enjoy. So go to Graphically.com. Follow them on Twitter, twitter.com/Graphically. Don't miss a thing. And if you have an iPad, if you got an iPad for Christmas, you might want to check out some new titles came out for the iOS newsstand from Image and Top Cow. You can get Witchblade or Darkness or Hack Slash or Super Dinosaur or Charmed from Zenoscope. All delivered to your iPad. Don't miss a single issue. You can subscribe just straight from the app. It's super cool. I'm actually a big fan of that product because it's actually a really neat way to consume your comics. So, check it out. Go to graphically.com. Check it all out. We thank them for their support.
The best thing that happened to Avengers X Sanction was the recent announcement of Avengers versus X-Men versus. Because now it no longer has the worst title.
Yeah, it really is true.
Wait till they give one of those a point, too.
This is just a mess. It's just a mess. It's just a complete mess.
Was the first issue a mess?
Yeah, the first issue was a mess. Remember that? I described the first issue as this is not my kind of comic. But
you bought the second issue.
Yeah, of course. Well, I got because this is one of seven starting points to the 2012 big event.
Exactly.
Of Marvel.
Is it Avengers Children's Crusade or is it this or what is it?
You wouldn't be able to follow along.
I wouldn't at all. I need to know. Well, no, but it ties into Cable and Hope and like ties into my X-Men kind of world, and so I want to know what's happening in it. But like honestly, like this isn't McGinnis's best work. Cable just looks awful. Like I don't like the way he's drawing Cable, and I know so Cable's got 24 hours to live, and the techno-organic virus is taking him over. And yeah,
I've never heard that one. That's a new take on it.
And in this one, he fights Iron Man, and he uses some tech from the future, some Iron Man Stark tech from the future that Stark hasn't invented yet. And it's just kind of like the same. I've seen this fight over and over again. Like it's really nothing new. And then Red Hulk shows up, and just as the techno-organic virus overtakes his face.
You know how you've seen it before. Yeah. That's because that's what people want.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
They want to see what they've seen before. Yeah. It's easier.
And it's funny because like seeing Red Hulk now written and by Loeb and drawn by McGinnis after like a year plus of Red Hulk in by Parker and Hardman and mm-hmm. Zercher and the other guys and as well as other places where he pops up, I don't like the Loeb McGinnis Red Hulk. Like he's kind of mean. He snarls and like it's all this kind of I like the Red Hulk and Jeff Parker's book a lot better.
Who feels kind of like an old man soldier?
Yeah, it's
a good point.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
So, yeah, it's subtle. It's definitely subtle, and a lot of it has to do with McGinnis because McGinnis draws him with that big grin and the glowing yellow eyes, and that's what, But
this is not really fair to McGinnis.
Yeah.
I mean, like he started it.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, and honestly, I loved him. Well, if I ended up falling in love with it by the end of the run,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was an interesting note. I was like, ooh, it's after reading Red Hulk by other people, it's weird to come back to him, by these creators. So, mm-hmm. anyway,
Action Comics 5 was funny because the cover says it begins again, and it's the rocket ship leaving Krypton, and one of the rumors about the whole reboot is partially to escape this lawsuit that the Siegel and Schusters are
that makes for good comics.
Enacted on DC, so you figure you're going to get a new origin here, and you basically got the same origin.
Exactly. Like, almost exactly.
So I went into it waiting for a new origin, waiting for some sort of new twist, and there was some minor tweaks, but other than that, it was pretty much exactly the same origin as before, so I wonder what's going on with the lawsuit.
Which, by the way, made it really boring for me.
Yeah, yeah.
See, it's just like, I like origins.
I've read Superman Origins so many times.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to change it, I mean, they just did it, like, they just did Superman Origin. That was like 2 years ago, maybe.
And Earth One.
Yeah, and then Earth One. Although that's gone. That's out of my head.
Yeah,
it's out of there completely.
I don't know. I wasn't terribly enthused by this. I continue to not be enthused by this action book, even though
I've liked the story that was going on, but now we got to go back. And I mean, I get it. I get it. I just kind of wish I'd skipped it because
Yeah,
it's fine. No. It's fine.
I kept waiting for the twist. I kept turning a page. Maybe it'll be new now. Nope.
Nothing. Meanwhile, though, OMAC continues to be the funnest book. One of the funnest books I read week in and week out.
It's awesome.
How many issues do you think you got left of this one?
I don't know, but I hope a lot, because this feels like an old Marvel book.
It's very Stan Lee-esque.
Yeah.
It feels like a 60s Marvel book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm actually going to now – it's crossing over with Frankenstein, and I'm actually going to get the Frankenstein issue because that's how much I'm enjoying this. And Frankenstein is a big character in this book. And actually, Jeff Lemire gets a co-writing credit in the beginning of this issue.
This is the
biggest surprise of the line still. It still continues to be.
It's, that two-page spread of them fighting with the no sound effects?
That was
awesome. Yeah.
this is a great book. There's nothing I don't love about this book, and it may end next month. It may end in 3 months. I don't really, I'll enjoy it as long as it comes.
Two books that aren't selling real well crossing over seems odd.
Yeah,
but it seems at least they're not doing it as a stunt.
Right. Yeah. No, they're just doing it because it makes
sense. They want, because Lemire's like, hey, you want to cross over with me? He does it with everybody.
Yeah.
But it also makes sense. It makes sense for Swamp Thing and Animal Man.
Yeah.
Cross
oh,
over.
Yeah.
That's sense right. Here for OMAC and Frankenstein to cross over. In fact, Frankenstein being in most of this book felt natural. It felt like he should be in this book. He really worked out. And the fight between him and OMAC was great.
Yeah.
I really love this book.
Yep.
I thought that this next title was a typo. I'm serious. I was like, am I missing a comma? What's going on here?
Wolverine and the X-Men Alpha and Omega, number one.
Man versus X-Man.
So this is Brian Woods' triumphant return back to Marvel with a miniseries focusing on Quentin Quire versus Wolverine. And it's got, kind of double art duties with half the art by Roland Boschi and Dan Brown and the other half by Mark Brooks with a bunch of other people.
That sounds like a win.
Yeah.
Aren't they doing this character work in Wolverine the X-Men?
That's my complaint about it, is that I don't really understand. So this literally picks up to the point where the recap page on the from the first issue features art by Chris Pacello and recaps kind of what happened in Wolverine and X-Men. I think 3 issues into the Wolverine and X-Men, a offshoot miniseries to tell a little side story might be too soon. And especially with what's going on with Quentin in that book, I'm struggling with, okay, well, how does this fit in continuity-wise? And, and how does this fit in? And this actually – I actually didn't quite enjoy this because it wasn't Wolverine the X-Men. Like, I'm like, no, don't use this.
It just seems like one of the central conflicts in that book is Quentin Quire and Wolverine, and now they're spinning it off their own thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't get this for that reason. I was like, well, I don't want to – I feel like that tone is very specific in that book, and I don't necessarily want to read it in another book with a different tone.
So basically what happened was that Quentin continues his grudge against Wolverine, and to prove that he's one of the most powerful mutants there, he mentally attacks Wolverine in armor and puts them into a world in the in New York or whatever, or like a kind of post-apocalyptic New York or whatever it might be. And so they're living out this construct that he's built, and meanwhile Quentin back in Westchester is trying to keep the construct going. So that's the premise. And it was all right. I mean, it just didn't excite me as much as the Wolverine X-Men series did.
Yeah, that's why I didn't get it.
Yeah.
They're diluting their brand.
Yeah, that's actually, it feels very diluted. So, what can you do?
Boy, everybody listening at home was like, "Well, that was really just unenthusiastic."
Yeah, it was very unenthusiastic.
Well, we sorry, at the top of the show. It's not. It wasn't a week where I finished my books going, "Wow, that was awesome." There was, I kind of just went through my books this week and didn't. Other than
that's
like,
why Peanuts was the pick.
Yeah,
it made me feel good. Made me happy.
That's okay. Jerome
Mack, you son of a bitch.
And they're paying. They're paying big time. The the feminist Nazi feminist lobby.
They've gotten to you.
All right,
I wasn't supposed to say anything. Shit.
So those are a bunch of books that came out this week that we enjoyed or didn't enjoy. But you and the iFanboy community read a lot of comic books as well. And if you go to iFanboy.com/comics is where you can do your pull list. Then you can come back and you can rate and review the books as well as you can make your own picks of the week. And Connor, why don't you highlight what the top five picks of the weeks are for the week, for the first week of 2012.
Well, the pick of the week was Peanuts number one, and that got 2.3%. I don't know what number that was at, but it was lower than the top five. Number five was Action Comics number five with 3.2%. Number four was OMAC with number five with 6.3%. Number three was Animal Man number five with 11.5%. Number two was Fatale number one with 15.9%. And the number one pick of the week amongst the iFan base was Swamp Thing number five with 45.3%, which is a lot.
Wow.
I was not expecting that.
Marvel just got shut out.
They did. They totally got shut out.
They didn't have anything really big this week.
Yeah, they didn't. They really. Although I did miss – we're going to talk about it a little bit, but I did miss the Avengers annual. I got to go back and pick that up because I do like the annuals. But anyway. Okay, so – but a bunch of you also wrote reviews of books and want to highlight some of those. And the first one comes from Grifter number seven, Grifter78, who reviewed Stormwatch number 5 and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 1.3% of you made it your pick of the week. And Grifter78 said, "Wow, what an amazing issue. I thought Cornell had wrapped up the previous conflict last issue a little too quickly, but now I know why he did. This issue had exactly what I wanted. Good character moments, great action, and an amazing cliffhanger. One of the things people have mentioned about the first two issues of this title is how fast-paced it was. Some people liked it, while others didn't. It didn't bother me as much because I already knew half these characters, so there wasn't much for me to learn. But I can see how a new reader might get lost in so many characters. Cornell does a good job of slowing things down enough at the beginning of this issue to give a nice in-story recap of the characters and their powers. He also throws in tidbits of information about some of the characters that hadn't previously been shared. This is a nice way to get readers up to speed if they were a little lost before." And, I just had to laugh because so this is 5 issues in from the new Stormwatch, and then it's basically the last page says Stormwatch number 6, Stormwatch Reborn. Like they're basically relaunching Stormwatch 6 issues in the 6th issue.
Is this the last Paul Cornell issue? Or
I think it is.
I bought it, and I'm not buying it anymore.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
I'm not buying it anymore.
This was a big letdown.
The thing is, it had promise, and it deflated. And if the whole thing was Apollo and Midnighter walking around getting to know each other, hell yes.
Yep.
Those parts are fantastic. And also, if the Photoshop coloring had any idea what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. I did that last time. I'm not doing it again.
No, I know. I'm just laughing at the fact that, I mean, the issue was all right, and you know, kind of wrapped it up or whatever. Then the big thing blew up at the end, and you know, whatever. But I just laughed out loud when I got to the last page when it's like when it says 2012, the end of the world starts here. You know, and they said check out the consequences of this page. Check out Grifter number 7, Superman number 6, Stormwatch number 6, Stormwatch Reborn. Really? You just did it. You just did it 6 months ago. It's like, oh well, comics.
We got to get people interested. Yeah. You know, maybe ditching your creative team. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Stanley reviewed the Avengers Annual number 1 and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5 and 0.2% of you made the pick of the week. And just as an aside, I checked and Peanuts was number 6 on the list. So it was pretty good showing for Peanuts.
Not bad.
Yeah. Stanley says, "This was a really pleasant surprise. With any annual, you never know what you're getting into. Is it part of the overall storyline? Is it a standalone issue? Does it have anything to do with the monthly at all? Spin the wheel, cough up a little more cash than usual, and find out. Well, I spun this one and was glad I did. Bendis brought back a highly interesting plot line that he started way back in the beginning of this particular renumbering and left the reader with a satisfying ending that promised more without hinting at any obvious future directions. What really pushed this issue for me, though, was the art. Delotto made even the actionless pages pop with his heavy-handed ink work." I didn't read it.
I missed it, so.
It was the return of Wonder Man and Angry Wonder Man. That's all I know.
Oh, really?
I normally buy annuals for books I read, but I don't really care about Wonder Man not liking the Avengers being in. So it was the Revengers.
Yeah.
Whatever. Ooh.
Wasn't that in the last? Didn't they already do that annual?
They did it. Well, that's what he said. They did it at the very beginning of the renumbering. They fought Wonder Man, and they sort of dropped that, and then he's back now.
But wasn't one of the other annuals, like, it was funny because I was like, the Avengers annual number 1. I was like, okay, come on. You're you're taking a like it's Avengers Annual Number One Volume 5. You know,
yeah.
Like let's.
It's been a lot of annual number ones.
Is it a lot of number ones? Obviously, they sell and get pick of the weeks, a lot.
Yeah. Oh, well, so to each your own, and so that's why you go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you can write your own reviews, and you can share your opinions, and you might agree or disagree. It's up to you. It's a community. That's what we're here for, to celebrate ideas.
And so, take no prisoners.
Take no prisoners. 2012
or Guff.
Give no quarter.
The buck stops here. So.
Whoa.
All right. On to
not
the,
1 inch.
On to the emails.
The beach.
Mish says, with a lot of the new 52 books coming to a close with their first arc, I have a few questions. What do you feel DC did right with the relaunch, and what do you think they did wrong, such as what they did and did not deal with when rebooting? Also, as a trade reader, the relaunch got me to monthly reading and got me excited for Wednesdays. Do you feel the relaunch did bring in the estimated amount of new readers DC was trying to recapture, or do you think it was mostly old fans that stayed on with DC?
That's a tough question.
Guess at this.
The second question is the way to answer.
Yeah.
Speculation.
Let's talk about, let's say, Connor, what do you think DC did right and wrong?
Right was they tried a lot of new kind of characters in books, like Omac or Grifter or Animal Man or Swamp Thing, characters you never would have had, that never would have had books a year ago. Mm-hmm. That was the best thing, I think, to come out of this book was, and they put top-level creators in them, and they're doing great books. I think that was the biggest thing they did right with the relaunch, was try new things.
Okay. What do you think they've done wrong?
I didn't think it went far enough. I think they left too much bleed over from the old world, and it's still very confusing in that sense. I think they should have just started with a really, really fresh, complete reboot from the start and not had anything to do with the old world at all.
Ron?
I think what they did right, I agree with Connor, is that they went to characters that they took risks on some characters while also giving a basis and the establishment of the characters that we already knew and would expect. I think what they did wrong was I don't think that they gave enough time to breathe with those books and those creative teams. Like we saw some changes and things like that. And they while they said this is all brand new, they, like you said, they didn't go far enough. Like they, leaving. And admittedly, I wouldn't want to fuck with what Scott Snyder did and whatever was going on Batman, and we know what was going on Green Lantern and all that sort of stuff. But those stuff never felt new. And I actually think that there's also, if you look at the whole line of DC, which makes sense from a business standpoint, not from a fan standpoint or an editorial standpoint, but like, what was it, like 12 Batman books? Six Superman books, you know what I mean? Like it would just seem very – and that's what was before too, but it just seemed very heavy on what was it was a way of – basically what they did was they waved their hands like, look, it's brand new, brand shiny and new, and it really wasn't. You know, so that's my
question. For certain books. For some other books, it's very new.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say that sort of falls under the right. The thing they did right with it just overall was they created a hype that was mostly justified.
Yeah,
and it got people excited, and it got people buying books, and it is one of those floats all boats kind of things. It brought people into the shops, and that's something that nobody has been able to do with anything near the success of them. So that's good for everybody. It's just good, good for digital. It's good for retailers, creators, things like that. Wrong. Editorial seems to be a bit of a mess in certain aspects. They're kicking creative teams off in certain places after barely getting a chance to get started. A lot of the books had dog teams on them. They had this, like, characters that nobody cared about that didn't have a shot in hell.
Yeah.
And you've already, no one's talking about them already. So I think they could have reached further with their talent. And then when they did that, let those people run a little bit and do that.
Well, that says they're consistent because that's what they did before.
Yes, totally. No, I mean it was like
editorial's a mess before, editorial's a mess now.
Well, right. And you're going to talk about being the same. The books felt – a lot of books felt the same. The books that were really good that were being done by people were then doing really good different books.
Yeah.
But, there's still much more of a win than it was a loss.
The question of whether or not, they brought in new readers or not is the question. I mean, if you look at, December numbers recently just came in and Marvel was on top again.
So, it's because DC didn't put any books out the last week. Marvel did.
True. Good point. But, but do you really think that they're all new readers?
I don't think there are hardly any.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the answer is we don't know. And the answer is that probably if they came in at all, they probably came in on the digital side. But we don't know. Yeah. So,
My guess is the people who buy comic books, people who are listening to the show, you guys out there, myself included, you guys, just bought a lot more DC books than they were. I doubt that people who have never read comics came in any great number. I'm sure some did. I'm sure they're outliers. But I bet people came back. I bet people who had left
most,
came back.
I think new people would be the people that came back. I think that's right. And, and that's what they were looking for, if they're being honest, and if they weren't talking to your press release. You know,
That's
they've mentioned it a little bit in the beginning, is they were looking to bring people back who were reading in the 90s.
Yeah, the lapsed readers are the people who abandoned them. Yeah. So I don't know.
We're successful in a certain sense, but we don't know for sure. There's no way we will know.
Yeah.
I think time will tell in that. Like, does it just go right back to where it was, you know, within the next 6, 7, 8 months?
Eventually it will. That's just the nature of attrition in the industry. Eventually we'll get back to there.
So they start a cycle of rebooting everything.
They bought themselves a couple more years.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, and who knows what their goals are internally. I mean, like, was to, you know, they needed to move units and, you know, make a big splash and do something. They accomplished that, you know, and they could be happy with that. So who knows? You know?
Yeah, I could just see them meeting at the next quarterly meeting. Yeah. So what happened to these numbers? We work in comics.
Exactly.
I thought we talked about this.
All right. Next email is from Elizabeth from Santa Rosa, who says, I've never been to any comic book event, mainly because I'm new to reading comics, and nothing is ever in Northern California. I'm a fan of many Image books. I saw that they're having a comic expo in Oakland, but their website hasn't much info up. So my question is simple. Do you guys think it would be worth going to? Only because...
Do you like Image books?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you like Image books, then if you look at they're starting to release more information about who's going to be there, and it's pretty much everybody who's working at Image is going to be there. But then also what's interesting is that they've opened it up to anybody supporting creator-owned comics. So I've heard through the grapevine that there are going to be other exhibitors there, other publishers there beyond just Image. There are going to be other publishers that do creator-owned comics. So, and they're going to be like artist alley tables and tables for creators and things like that. So, I mean, it has potential. All that said, it's the first year of a new show, so it could suck. We don't know. There's no precedence yet for it.
Things overheard at the show. Oh, have you seen the lines at the Image booth? At the door. Oh.
It is an untested thing. So, but the thing is, if you're in Northern California and you got a, you know, you want to go to a comic event and you're not quite, you know, like you're not, you got nothing to do that weekend, go, give it a shot. It can't hurt. I mean, I'm in San Francisco. I'm going to go. You know, I'm excited because a lot of people I know are going to be there and all the fun stuff. And we're going to be there in some capacity through iFanboy and or graphically. So, you know, there's a professional reason to be there. But, you know, it's interesting. If you like Image Comics, go. You know,
if you only read Marvel and DC, I probably would.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, if you're only an Avengers fan, then you're kind of shit out of luck. A question is, I don't know if there's going to be any dealers or not. Like, it's a lot of open questions.
No one really knows the details. So they do, hopefully. Assumingly, they do.
Yeah, hopefully they do.
It's comics.
So, all right. So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And you can also call us and leave us a voicemail like this gentleman.
Hi, fanboys. This is Jake Elliott from Peoria, Illinois. I have a friend at work whose passion is war movies, but has never read a comic book. The more historically accurate the movie, the more they like it. What's the comic book equivalent of this so I can get it for him as a gift the next time that kind of thing is going on? Thanks for your help. Later.
I have two words for you, Jake. Garth Ennis. He's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I did a series of short stories, sort of a little war anthology for Dynamite called Battlefields. I think there's one or two trades out.
There's two trades.
There's two.
There's a new trade. It may be a re-release. I'm not sure, but there's definitely a hardcover of the first three, which are the best ones.
But that's a great one to start with. You give him that. And that's they're fiction, but they're factual, definitely. He did other things for Vertigo called War Stories, which were mostly World War II, I think. A little World War I also. That were just straight up war stories. All these great British artists who drew wonderful tanks and planes and stuff like that. As far as sort of true war stories, there's a great book called Allen's War, which is more of indie, but it was about a guy's time in Italy during World War II. There's a bunch of other Connors. You must know something.
Two generals.
Oh, that's a great one. Two Generals by Scott Chandler. Story of Scott's, I'm gonna say grandfather, great grandfather, serving for Canada in the war. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Sergeant Fury and Howling Commandos. Mm-hmm. Wait, that was factual.
Joe Kubert stuff. What was that one that he did the recently?
Vietnam.
Dong Zhuai.
Dong Zhuai, 1968.
That's factual.
Yep.
That is factual. That's a straight up telling, and he took it very seriously. If you want it, I mean, I don't know if you want other wars, but like Joe Sacco does comics of war zones. You want about Bosnia called Safe Area Garage, which is good. Also, there's a lot of good war comics. I don't think a ton of people read them, but they definitely exist.
So. Cool. All right, so on to our next question. I got a question about a classic character.
Hey guys, Ben from Brooklyn here. Love the podcast. Quick question. I never read Hulk growing up, and real recently somebody gave me the trade of World War Hulk by Greg Pak and John Romita Jr. Read it, loved the writing, loved the art, and I'm just wondering, based on that, if there's some other Hulk trades you'd recommend, if it's worth me going back and reading Planet Hulk now that I've read World War Hulk. Thanks, man. Peace.
Well, if you liked World War Hulks, then you should probably definitely check out Planet Hulk. I mean, that was all spinning around the same time, and same creative teams were involved, and that was really the same era. So if you like one, you probably like the other. Yeah. Then there's the Red Hulk series that came out after that, which Ron and I really enjoyed. I have 7 trades of that. That's the Loeb McGinnis run. Yeah. There's also then it comes into Jeff Parker and Hardman. That's part of that run too. That's part of that trade run also. So there's a lot. If you like Red Hulk, there's a lot of those.
Yeah. But meanwhile, besides that, Greg Pak, who did Planet Hulk and War Hulk, had been writing one of the Hulk books that whole time through. It was Incredible Hulk for a little while, but basically he did a long run on Hulk. So there's should be a long sort of string of those trades.
And then if you want to go kind of historical, kind of go back in the past, Marvel has reprinted Hulk Visionaries, and it's mainly Peter David. I mean, Peter, before Greg Pak, and Bruce Jones beforehand, but that wasn't as good. But Peter
first Bruce Jones trade's good.
Yeah, but the rest of them
quickly fell apart. Yeah.
But the Hulk Visionaries, Peter David, there's like 8 volumes of those, and they're collecting the old Hulk issues from like the 330s, close to 400 or so, close to issue 400, and he told some great stories with Future Imperfect and the Maestro and all that sort of stuff. So there's some great Hulk stories in there as well. So.
The first Bruce Jones trade has Romita Jr. art, so if he likes the art in World War Hulk, it's the same artist. So it's called Return of the Monster. That trade's good. After that, it was no good. But
yeah, so cool. All right,
more
so
Hulk than you can deal with,
more than you can ever deal, than you can shake a stick at.
It's the strongest one there is.
He is. Smash.
Hulk takes out prisoners as well.
So if you have any questions, you can call us, leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. And now that we are back in the new year, iFanboy is kicking on all cylinders, and iFanboy Don't Miss is rolling as well. That's our companion podcast, which comes out one of our many companion podcasts.
Oh, yeah, there's another one now. Yeah, I got to put that in the script.
Yeah. Anyway, iFanboy Don't Miss comes out every Monday, and that's where we talk to a creator about one comic book that's coming out on the stands on Wednesday that you absolutely cannot miss. And this week, our good friend Chris Niesman is going to be talking with artist Ryan Stegman about Scarlet Spider #1. The big launch is this Wednesday, so you definitely want to take a listen to that. It's going to appear in the feed, so if you subscribe to it. If you subscribe through iTunes, you can get it automatically, or go to ifanboy.com on Monday to get iFanboy Don't Miss.
You could also go to ifanboy.com. You could read my pick of the week. You can read the book of the month for January when it goes up. Anyway, we do all sorts of stories and stuff. We're out of lists now. We've done all the lists.
Yeah.
And next week, I don't know what we're going to do.
Listomania.
If you want to know what the best of something from last year was, I got your answer, is what I'm telling you. You can get over to ifanboy.com. You can see all of that stuff. We've been doing it for 2 weeks. We're done now. So there it is. You can go to ifanboy.com/about. You can see who we are and how to hook up with us in social networks and things like that. And you can, of course, follow us on twitter.com and facebook.com/ifanboy. Both of those. There's all the podcasts there. If you go backwards, you can see all the video shows and minis and everything. A new podcast we're doing of a short making comics podcast called iFanboys Make Comics. That's every Wednesday morning, where I'm talking with Andy Schmidt, who's the founder of Comics Experience. It's a school for making comics. He used to be an editor at IDW and Marvel. Guy knows his stuff. Him and I chat for 10 minutes or so on a topic of people who want to make comics, break into comics, things like that. It's a quick hit. And even if you don't, it sort of helps with the craft. And I think it's a fun, informative listen.
Yeah, I've been listening to them. They've been interesting. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Phew.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOY 326-2697. Any questions, comments, keep it around 30 seconds. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Yes. And if you dig what iFanboy does, go tell the world. Tell your friends. Tell your comic book store. Tell anybody who might be interested in comics that they should check out the wonderful world of iFanboy.com and all the great podcasts. And if you listen to the podcast and you haven't left a review on iTunes, please go leave a review for this podcast, for iFanboy Don't Miss, for Word Balloon, for Tom vs. Aquaman, for Around Comics, any of the other great podcasts that we all know and love and listen to. And it definitely helps people discover new podcasts and helps get the word out. So we appreciate and we thank everybody who's left a review of this podcast since the 2005. It's been a long time.
It's a lot of them.
It's a lot of them.
I mean, there's a scary amount.
Yeah, it's really.
And I'm not saying to stop.
Yeah, no, keep it going. Keep it going.
Listen, for the people listening at home, I'm not saying, oh, there's enough. Don't worry about it. I'm saying let's make it more scary.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. So first one of 2012 in the books. It's good to be back. I've got the pick next week, is I believe I do.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that'll be exciting. I'm always love to see what my first pick of the year will be. So,
what will the book of the month be?
That's another good question, too. Yeah. Whew. Actually, I have a couple of contenders for that. So, yeah. All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
That means I'm next.